B-Pod Studios.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Checkpoint Daily. On this illustrious Wednesday, we're going to be talking about Jim Carrey and what the hell he might be doing in the MCU. Microsoft continues to make billions of dollars. We bring back What If Wednesday. Stay tuned to see what we said might be happening if something else didn't happen. And Wanda Wednesday is back. Aren't you excited?
Yes.
That and more on this episode of Checkpoint Daily.
The latest esports and gaming news. Checkpoint XP Daily has got you covered. Find it online at checkpointxp.com. Get in the game with your hosts, Norris, Callie, and Chad.
Yo, we back. We're back. Before the episode started, I was trolling somebody on the internet. And they got real mad at me.
There was some big mad.
There was some big madness. Half the chat is also mad at me. Don't care. Don't care at all. Listen, it is what it is. But I'm happy to be here with Callie Scales and Chad Callahan. What's going on, y'all?
I'm excited to be here on a beautifully sunny Wednesday.
Yeah, it is like really nice.
It is one of those days where it's like, okay, it's 18 degrees outside. That's awful. At least the sun is shining.
I like the winter.
I don't mind winter as long as the sun's out. I feel like that's the part that really gets me.
Yeah, gray winter can be depressing.
Last weekend it was gray all weekend and I didn't do anything. Yeah. I didn't even play games. Yeah. I didn't do a damn thing. Well, it must have been the weekend before because I played Minecraft all last weekend. So
I can deal with sunny blue skies winter. I can't deal with like, oh, look, it's gray again for the 18th day in a row.
I like it all. It kills me. You know why? Because winter is honest. Okay? You look outside. It is. It's
winter
honest.
Winter is earth without makeup.
It is. You look outside and you go, damn, that's a lot of snow outside. You know you got to bundle up.
Okay, right, I guess
spring and autumn, you got a bright, clear, sunny day, and you walk outside, and it's 39, and your jacket ain't doing shit. Okay, and you go out in the summertime. Also, honest, see, it's the solstice.
You don't like
the solstice.
Yeah, you don't like the transitory
month. The equinox is not. I don't fuck with equinox.
I love my in between seasons more. Like fall and spring are my jam. But I guess maybe I just I liked being in a cloud of doubt.
Nah, I like the summertime and the wintertime. I like hot, I like cold.
Well, Chad That's likes it. To be surprised. You're
yeah,
not a fan.
I love a good, you know what? We don't know what we're getting today. Love it. Plus, I love the fashion.
I mean, fall fashion is top tier.
Oh, 1,000. Then spring fashion.
I tend to agree with you, Norris. I like summertime. It's the only month that I like. I hate all other months, seasons.
And
rather.
I'm glad you said it right, because we really only get like one month of summer.
I said
summer, and in my head thought July.
July.
Well, oh, man. I think August.
But. August, too. Yeah, we get about 2 months
nowadays. We get 2.5 months. You get, June can be hot than a bitch, too.
It can't. You get like June 20th through August 21st.
Yeah.
You're pretty certain to be nice and warm. And
I was born in May, but early May, so it's still crummy outside.
Yeah.
But anyway, enough of that stuff. Here's what's happening in the world of gaming.
All right, so we're actually going to start off in the MCU, where rumors began to surface that Jim Carrey was in talks to join the MCU. No real hint as to who he might be playing, but I thought it'd be fun for us to go around the room and say, who would you cast Jim Carrey in? Because when you talk about Jim Carrey, it's easy to think, oh, the guy from Liar Liar or Ace Ventura or anything like that. But he's actually had some very serious roles over the last few years,
too. You could get Eternal Sunshine Jim Carrey.
Exactly, and it's like, you know, he could actually play a lot of different villains or characters that would be interesting. I just want to know if you guys had any thoughts on who you might
Kang
like to see
the Conqueror.
Kang the Conqueror. Okay.
They could really jump the shark and make him like, a celestial or somebody like that. Or
yeah.
You know, the Silver Surfer or something like that.
I got to tell you, a name.
Like an older version of a current character.
Well, the Silver Surfer has not been in the MCU.
Oh, you're right. I'm thinking of. Yeah. For some reason, what's the fast guy?
Quicksilver.
Quicksilver. Yeah, no.
I'll tell you, someone dropped one on my Twitter timeline that at first I went, no, absolutely not. And then the more I thought about it, the more I started getting to be like, you know what? Actually,
you know what?
I get excited about that.
I don't know what character, but I know what franchise he'd be great in.
What?
Deadpool.
Deadpool, that's not bad. No, here's the one that got me. Norman Osborn.
Oh, damn it! That would be great.
If anyone could fill the Willem Dafoe shoes of chewing the scenery and yet having some seriousness behind him, actually, Jim Carrey would be a really good Norman Osborn, and he's the right age for it right now.
I'd like that. I think he'd be. I feel like Spider-Man always has the best, like, I don't know, villains, in my opinion.
Spider-Man gets like, it's the Batman effect, is because Spider-Man is strong, but not so strong to where
it doesn't feel
a deranged regular dude couldn't get at Spider-Man.
Right.
And maybe that's just because when I grew up, the only two real superheroes I even cared about were both Batman from the DC universe and Spider-Man from the Marvel universe. And that was really, and maybe X-Men, but I only had my handful.
I mean, you named the two
about
that have the best rogues gallery for certain.
Absolutely.
Listen,
yeah.
Listen, I enjoy The Flash as much as the next person, but there's only so much you can do with Captain Cold and Captain Boomerang.
And then what's the anti-Flash or
the Nega Flash?
I think that's
Timmy Turner's villain, Negachin or whatever it is.
Oh, yeah. I think
it is the Anti-Flash or something.
Anti-Flash.
Like that.
Reverse Flash.
That's the one.
Thank you.
Yeah,
that's
no,
the
Reverse.
One.
The Flash villains are stupid.
They're terrible.
Anyway, they're awful. But anyway, no, Jim Carrey coming to the MCU, I think, is great. I think at this point, the MCU is just like, everybody wants to be involved. I think you get the call from Marvel and you say, whatever you want me to do, I'm in.
Yeah, there's like, I think three actors whose heads are far enough up their own ass that they wouldn't do it. But like at this point, if you get the call.
Oh, like, okay, Daniel Day-Lewis probably wouldn't do it.
I could see him saying no to that.
You know who would? And people would be like, what? Meryl Streep.
I love Meryl Streep. You could put her in anything and I'll watch it.
She'll absolutely do it.
Yeah, I think she would do it. Like, I don't know, would Al Pacino do it?
He might. I feel like he would.
No, Pacino wouldn't.
Here's the reason
Pacino
why I think
wouldn't.
He would.
De Niro would, not Pacino.
I think Pacino would because he did Hunters and it was low-key kind of like a superhero feel as far as like the storytelling went. And I feel like he'd do a very good job. Maybe not as like he'd probably be like one of the side characters, DC, what's his name? The
like Alfred or something.
Yeah, or Alfred or something.
Yeah.
I feel like he'd do something like that, but he wouldn't be like the superhero unless he's like an old superhero character, obviously, because he's, you know, dying.
Jeez.
You could have just said he was older, but dying? Goodness.
Damn.
I mean, have you seen him lately?
We'd like to point out that Checkpoint XP is not aware of any information that he may be dying or not.
I mean, we're all dying, so let's be
honest. We all live to die, bro. Yeah.
Anyway.
All right. Microsoft is killing it right now. Over the last 3 months, they have made enough profit to redo their ZeniMax acquisition twice.
Now, how much was that? $7 billion? $7 billion. So they've made $14 billion.
Yeah.
In 1 year?
No, in 3 months.
In three months.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, profit.
Well,
not gross.
Net.
Hold on.
Net.
Let's be honest, though. Like, releasing a console and then having all these games coming out.
So you release a console. That's usually a big boost.
The other part of it, their Game Pass numbers are up to 18 million subscribers.
Because everybody's at the crib.
Up from 15 million subscribers back in
And
September.
The new console helping that as well, because now you got it. Now you have to have that with it.
But you got to remember, you got the biggest state in the union, California. They were shut down. They were at another stay-at-home order for the better part of January and I think a little bit of December as well. So you had a month where couldn't nobody do nothing by just being at the crib. So, I mean, I'm not
what Sony's numbers are.
I'm pretty sure they're
just astronomical.
They're all up. The America's billionaires have collectively made $11 trillion in
COVID.
Over COVID. Just that period by itself, not like forever. Just the COVID period, the COVID era, as we like to say, the COVID arc.
They have made almost half of the United States debt.
Yeah. Just a few people. Is that not stupid and disgusting?
Capitalism is broken.
It's broken! But anyway, yeah, see, Volkai just said Cali just ended shutdown over in our chat. So, I'm not surprised by such big numbers, but at the same time, just the sheer amount of just dollars is frustrating.
Yeah.
All right, up next, it is What If Wednesdays. And this week...
I can't wait. This is like my favorite segment.
I'm going to find out what year this actually did happen so I give you guys the right number. But the question is simple.
Okay.
With the rumor circulating that a new or a remake of KOTOR is in development,
yes,
not done by EA, it got me to wondering, what if EA never bought BioWare? And that is our what if for What If Wednesday today.
Wow. Okay, I'll start off.
By the way, would you care to guess? I started typing, what year did EA? Would you care to guess what the first search result was?
Put out Battlefront?
Nope.
Mm.
Chad?
I have no idea.
What year did EA go wrong?
just what, in general. Accurate. Just go wrong.
What year did it all start falling apart for EA?
Okay, so here's the thing, and people are going to get a little upset at me when I say this, and I'm going to just be honest. If EA does not buy BioWare, obviously we don't get things like Anthem.
You think Anthem doesn't happen?
Okay. Or Anthem is good.
Let me finish. We don't get things like Anthem.
Okay.
But I think Mass Effect is nowhere near as great as it is. I think it becomes a cult game that a few people like, but I don't think it's as big as it is. Here's why. When Mass Effect 1 came out, it was a game that a lot of people had a lot of love for. It was a game that a lot of people really appreciated. It had a lot of great things going for it, but it was a game that had flaws, and many of them. Mass Effect 2 and 3 come out, arguably two of the greatest science fiction video games ever made. The ending of 3 aside. Right?
The last hour of 3 aside.
Even really the last 15 minutes, because even the last hour was pretty okay. But you take that aside, Mass Effect 3 is still one of the greatest sci-fi games ever made.
Agreed, I love it. Mass Effect 3.
So you take those two. If you don't have the massive financial backing and, you know, a mainstream push of EA, I think Mass Effect does, especially with 3, doesn't get to the scale that it gets to. And so I think that's a massive loss. Chad, Anthem never comes out. We never speak of it. Andromeda probably doesn't come out and doesn't suck. I think they continue Mass Effect, but I think it becomes almost kind of like The Witcher in a sense, where the last one is really, really good. The other two are kind of okay, but that last one, people love it, and it's heralded as this great game, and here we are. I think that's what happens to BioWare. I think Casey Hudson and most of those people still work there.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's they still develop games, but I don't think they're as big as they are, and I think some of those games suffer for it.
All right, so my disagreement lies in the fact I think BioWare and Mass Effect are still huge games. Maybe not with a different crowd, though, because with EA not involved, Mass Effect 2 becomes one of the all-time leading gay video games. We don't get the corporate cave-in, the bowing to Fox News pressure that we got with Mass Effect 2 that caused them to strip out all the gay romances in Mass Effect 2, some of which were actually recorded and are in the game to this day.
Yeah. It's true.
Just locked behind coding, and they can be fixed if you mod the game properly.
Mm-hmm.
I believe those romances come fully through, and the LGBTQ community adopts the Mass Effect franchise wholesale and powers it to a great conclusion.
Interesting.
I believe that it is one of the all-time great LGBTQ games. What I do foresee changing is, of course, the fate of the Old Republic. Because I don't think it ever happens.
I don't think it happens either.
Because EA will still own, presumably, the right to Star Wars. They'll still have the license for it. So I don't think the Old Republic ever gets made. Instead, does BioWare go to EA and beg for the permission to do KOTOR 3?
Nope. I think they do Jade Empire.
I agree with you. They I think Jade Empire Jade gets Empire. Made. We get a new Jade Empire and a Dragon Age comes out sooner. I think that's the route that they go in place of...
Chad.
I'm actually shocked because I was like, how many other games do they have? They don't have a whole lot of games behind their belt. So I feel like, if anything, I'm going to piggyback off Callie because I agree. I think Mass Effect would be a much stronger game if EA wasn't involved. And I think the success of Dragon Age on top of that, because that game alone does have the ability to have gay romances because you could romance anyone.
Right.
At least I know.
Well, Mass Effect 3 does as well, but Mass Effect 2 is where they wanted to begin that kind of stuff. But everything, you know, Fox News lost it. It was like, you can have gay sex with aliens, which, I mean, that is literally 90% of the draw.
So I think if BioWare wasn't picked up by EA, BioWare would have just grown on its own, and it would have just had a bigger collection.
So you think you think they would have had more titles?
I feel like instead of just being like Mass Effect 3 and Dragon Age this and all these other things, they would have had more outside of Anthem. They would have had new IPs, and I feel like that's where EA kind of, you know, shrunk them, because they know EA is about, how can we take this game and make it again and sell it again?
I think you got a point there. So it's one of those things that, you know, I see where you guys are coming from, especially the LGBTQ point, which, again, that's why representation on shows matters, because I would have never thought about that. Well, completely forgot about it and locked it away in the back of my mind.
To that end, as much as we rip on the Frostbite engine and everything having to get made in it, I mean, ME 2 and 3 do work pretty well with it. So.
They do. They do. They
I'll
work,
give them that.
They work well with Frostbite. But, you know, my main thing is the one thing EA is able to do is put money behind something. And I think that helped Mass Effect a lot. When you look at the differences between Mass Effect 1 and Mass Effect 2, I think you have a huge difference as to, you know, the quality of the game. And I think EA's involvement had a lot to do with that.
Yeah, I would agree with you. I also wanted to point out that Volkai mentioned in our chat that, remember, BioWare was owned by an independent investor before the sell to EA. So maybe the question is, who would they have sold to EA?
But you know what? Another point is it's Unreal that I think was 2 and 3. And they switched over
Frostbite
to Frostbite
for Andromeda.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that it must be correct. I think, you're right. I'm sorry. It was Andromeda that got
the
Frostbite engine.
But here's the thing, is that if they don't rush that game, and if that game actually has a little bit more time to be polished and the story doesn't suck, Andromeda's actually a pretty good-looking game.
And maybe we get the rest of the story where, you know,
Andromeda's a good-looking game. I like being able to jump.
It's pretty.
It's pretty.
Listen, I enjoyed Andromeda. I got to play it a couple years after release when a lot of the bugs were fixed.
See, I played it day one, and it was not a great experience.
No, I would imagine that was terrible.
But with that said, that's going to be it for part one. In part two, Callie and I are going to go nuts as we speculate about WandaVision and what all of this crap means. Because if you are not heavily versed in comic book and X-Men and Marvel lore, your ass is lost. So we're going to talk all about WandaVision. Coming up, Checkpoint Daily.
Bring the heat. Share your thoughts on socials with us at Checkpoint XP on Facebook and Twitter. You could even be featured on tomorrow's show.
Hey, everybody, and welcome back to Checkpoint Daily. Like I said, the best game show, or not game show, show about gaming in the world.
We should do it like a game show. We'll do an entire episode like a game show.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to Checkpoint Daily, the best game show about video games in the world. And now, your host, Norris Howard.
Very nice. Well done.
Kelly Scales, come on down.
When I was a kid, that was like my number one dream in this world, was to
be on the
Price
is
Right and get called on down. Oh,
let me tell you something. The Price is Right has to be the best game show ever made.
You don't last for 60 years for
Price is Right and Jeopardy, and I'm partial to Family Feud.
I mean, Family Feud, first of all, if there's a show that's gone through more hosts than Family Feud, I don't know it.
Yeah.
But who is the best Family Feud host?
I don't know. The first guy, what was his name?
Yeah. The guy who kissed everybody?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The touchy-feely one.
Creeper guy.
Yeah.
I don't know.
He was the best.
Richard Karn was the best host.
No.
Freaking
Louis
Al
Anderson.
From Home Improvement.
Louis Anderson was the best.
Louis Anderson. All right. Fair enough.
You know what the answer is? Not Steve Harvey.
Not Steve Harvey. Yeah. Literally anyone else. They had the guy who played Jay Peterman on Seinfeld. He was pretty great for a while.
All right. Okay. Very quick thing. Who would be the best host of Family Feud?
The best like modern day host of Family Feud? You know what? We just talked about him in the last segment, Jim Carrey.
No!
I want Jim Carrey hosting
you
Family
need
Feud.
Somebody more vanilla.
More vanilla?
Yeah.
I mean, Jim Carrey's pretty vanilla.
No, he's not vanilla. He's psycho. Who do you need? You need somebody.
Okay, you need someone.
Omega Wattal has a great one, Wayne Brady.
The most mayonnaise
black man ever made.
Wayne Brady is not bad. What is Wayne Brady doing right now? He said, let's make a deal. He's already hosting a game show. He can't go
host should make some.
Family
you know,
Feud.
They should get somebody like Rob Lowe. Somebody who's
Rob
like.
Rob Lowe's a great
get
answer.
Get Rob Lowe.
That's, Rob Lowe. Rob Lowe. Rob, I was the villain in Wayne's World Lowe.
That's
what
you get.
It.
You get Rob Lowe because like all the older members of the family, like the aunties and the moms or something, are like, ooh, Rob Lowe. And then all the younger girls are like, wow, that's a silver fox white man right there.
Yeah, there
and
you
then
go.
All the dudes are like all insecure and stuff. He'd be great.
Rob Lowe was on Parks and Recreation, and he is great on that show.
He's actually a pretty good comedic actor.
He's very funny. I'm into Rob Lowe.
But anyway, we're not here to talk about fucking Rob Lowe. We're here to talk about WandaVision.
You know what show would benefit from having Rob Lowe on it?
WandaVision.
There we go.
Oh, just Rob Lowe as some like random sword agent.
That would be wild. Like we'd be like, how did we not hear about that casting? That's interesting.
Oh man, no, that would be awesome. But I would say arguably we got our strangest WandaVision yet, which is which is amazing in this show. It gets progressively stranger.
Yep, so we're into the 70s now.
That's right.
The era of the Brady Bunch.
Technicolor.
As pointed out, definitely taking a lot of cues from the Brady Bunch.
Mm-hmm.
We get I wouldn't say our first clues that something is really wrong, but our first clues that more people than just Wanda know that something is really wrong. I thought really early on we get the sequence where Paul Bettany sees Herb cutting through the fence.
Yeah.
And just like, oh, so I am cutting through the fence. Like, it was a very off-putting episode.
Yes.
Unlike the other two, which were supposed to like the first episode, the Dick Van Dyke episode, has the one moment that's very off-putting where you're like, oh, something is wrong. And now, like, I feel like this is meant to represent like a dream. It's a dream, and the more you start pulling at threads, you can fix it for a minute, but the more the dream starts to unravel.
Well, and it starts to cave in on itself, and it starts to get very Twin Peaks-y.
Right.
And that's one thing that I really, really enjoy. But, you know, and Claire the Classy in our chat saying it's the Truman Show, I disagree. I don't think this is the Truman Show. I don't think this is a outside force imposing itself on Wanda.
No, but I think what Claire is getting at is the episode that we got this week is like the first like third of the Truman Show where he's starting to recognize that things
yes,
are wrong.
That part is true. But I think of what we saw throughout this episode, I think it is more and more evident that this is some sort of pocket dimension that has been created because, and we're just going to jump right to the end, because there's a lot of stuff about a baby growing in a matter of hours.
Yeah.
Which is
for good comedic effect, but not super important.
Not super important until we get to the final 10 minutes of the episode where the babies are born. Twin boys.
This is Billy and Tommy.
This is Billy and Tommy, which Callie, let us know who Billy and Tommy is in terms of the significance. I know, but let the people know.
Billy and Tommy Maximoff are the twins of the Scarlet Witch. They, in the modern era, are the leaders of the Young Avengers.
Yep.
They are known as Wiccan and Speed, much like Wanda and Pietro. One is reality warping and one is super fast. And we got Billy and Tommy, and we also know from the comics that their birth and eventual death is what leads to House of M. So we know that Wanda has a false pregnancy. She draws on the power unknowingly of Mephisto to conceptualize these twin children, and Mephisto eventually comes to claim what belongs to him. And that goes very badly for everyone involved because Wanda snaps.
Exactly.
And that's leading into House of M. I don't believe we're going to get that word for word because that would be very not like Marvel. But that's for sure the inspiration that we're drawing
from. And it makes no sense for her to utter no more mutants in an era, in a universe where we kind of right now don't have mutants yet.
Yeah.
So the thing is that the building blocks to making it so Wanda has some sort of emotional and mental breakdown are being constructed through this show.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason, you know, why I've also said that there's clearly some sort of pocket dimension is that Geraldine, who is the actress, is also confirmed to also be playing Monica Rambeau.
She's Monica Rambeau, for sure she is.
Is inside of this dimension and is thrown out of it by Wanda when she mentions Pietro.
Yeah, so as the children are born, Wanda starts singing in Sokovian, and mentions that she had a brother named Pietro. And Geraldine very offhandedly mentions, oh, he was killed by Ultron. In kind of a, like, I'm reminding you of something. Mm-hmm. Hey, Wanda, pay attention. And Wanda does not handle it well. Wanda gets very upset and literally tears her out of the pocket dimension and ejects her from Westview.
Now, here is the part that it starts to get really interesting, right? Where I'm not sure if Geraldine / Monica is, because she was wearing a necklace that had a sword insignia on it.
Yes, she did.
So I am not sure.
Which makes her the worst undercover agent in history.
Terrible. I am not necessarily sure if Monica Rambeau is an agent of S.W.O.R.D. who is tasked then with pulling her out of it, or if she is a S.W.O.R.D. agent who is tasked with her to change the pocket dimension itself by reminding her of what is on the outside world or what came before or whatever. Because we saw in the previous two episodes that Vision and Wanda kind of have they have gaps in their memory. They don't. They have no concept of what came before this dimension. That is the part that I find very interesting with the Geraldine character off the rip.
Well, and I mean, it makes sense, I think, for Vision, because Vision, as a theoretically a construct of Wanda's at this point, probably only could know what she knows. What's getting very interesting for me is Vision is starting to unravel what is happening.
He's starting to become self-aware.
He is starting to realize there is something very wrong with this place. I don't know what it is just yet. Both of them are starting to overcome or having to overcome this idea of, like, I mean, it's one of the classic things in literature. Would you rather have a fake existence that's perfect or a real existence that's imperfect?
But,
and that's the final question.
But the perfect existence was rejected. The Matrix taught us this. Okay.
You're right.
You know, flat out. And that is what we're starting to see. And I think the more that Vision recognizes that things are wrong, the more he's going to realize this is not what we're supposed to be doing. This is not where we're supposed to be.
Well, and we saw in the trailer, too, there is the scene where I think it's Agnes says to and Vision are talking, and Vision says to her, you're dead? And she's like, yeah, so are you.
Yeah.
Something to that effect. I can't remember the exact lines. But, like, why would you think you're dead? Well, because you are.
Right.
That's what it is.
Yeah.
And I'm starting to percolate on that. I think Wanda might have exploded Westview.
Mm-hmm.
I think she nuked Westview with her powers and brought everybody back.
Yep.
And everyone there is fake. And she's created this world where, like, I didn't do that. I did not just do
something,
what I think
something,
I did.
Something bad happened.
Yep.
That we don't know of. And Westview was destroyed.
Yep.
And all of the people that we see populating Westview are those citizens outside of Vision, Wanda, and Geraldine. Those are the only three people who did not previously live in Westview.
Correct.
Right? Because when we see Geraldine thrown out of the pocket dimension, right?
Yep.
There's clearly a perimeter that has been set up.
Yes.
The S.W.O.R.D. has set up a perimeter around this sort of, you know, almost like crater or dome.
Yeah.
Of
electricity, it looked like.
Yeah.
Kind of.
Of really
like a force field.
Of really CRT diodes.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
Yeah.
And that makes sense, the whole television theme. It represents CRT diodes that has, you know, clearly been cordoned off by S.W.O.R.D. And the sign that says Westview is
demolished
and destroyed and all that good stuff. And so I think that is what this is building towards, right? Is that we're building towards seeing what actually happened in Westview. And that explains why certain tasks, people kind of short circuit when they start happening, because it's either something they haven't done or they only can behave in a manner that's what they were doing before.
Right.
So when the neighbor was cutting the fence and he was cutting through the concrete separator there, right, he kind of short-circuited because Vision started talking to him for a bit too long. So it was just like almost like he's not supposed to still be talking to me.
I mean, I think that's it's an interesting like analog to the whole television motif that they're using, right? Like when you think about an episode of The Brady Bunch, we're getting this very singular look into a day or a couple days in the life of the Brady family or the Dick Van Dyke Show or whoever mm-hmm. it happens to be. And anything that's happening outside off the camera isn't really happening.
Right.
It's the classic rule of cinema. Only things that happen things on screen happen.
Yep.
That's all that matters. So anytime we're not in Wanda's, anything happening outside of Wanda's existence isn't really happening, right?
Right.
We see it in the first episode when Vision goes to work and no one can tell him what they do. No one can explain to him what it is they create or make or produce because to Wanda, it doesn't matter. All that matters to her
is
that Vision goes to work and brings home a paycheck. That's his role. That's what he's supposed to do. It doesn't actually matter what he does there.
Right. And I would not be surprised if we got a view of that, of like Wanda almost like stopping, not time, but stopping what's happening in this pocket dimension and going like over to somebody else's house, like going to Agnes's house mm-hmm. and seeing that Agnes is just frozen. She's just standing there waiting for the next thing to happen.
Exactly. And all the characters are kind of that nature. Like they don't do things unless it's plot relevant
yep.
outside of when they're interacting with Wanda. And I think it's just interesting that we've never once caught an instance where something like that has happened
yep.
unless it directly relates to Wanda.
Yeah, so I'm really interested to see where this goes. I think the biggest thread right now, or we have the beekeeper guy who's a complete unknown at this point.
I still don't know.
Which to me...
We have six more episodes to find out.
We do, which to me could either be a representation of Mephisto himself because there's a whole thing with flies and demons yep. and all that stuff. Or it could be Wanda conceptualizing a S.W.O.R.D. agent who has found a way inside of the pocket dimension but does not belong there. So she looks at it like, wait a minute. This is evil. Get it out.
Get it out of my universe.
Which is why she rewound time and was like, nope. This person can't belong here.
Yep.
Right? Because we see that the person who has the power to control everything there is Wanda. It's not S.W.O.R.D. It's not any other outside force. If she wants something to change in it, she'll change it.
Yeah, I think at this point I am 99% certain that Mephisto is going to play into this in some form or fashion.
Yep.
The fact that they brought in Billy and Tommy tells me that they could go with a different villain. They've done that before where they do the same story but with a different villain, but He's a prime candidate for this sort of thing. He's very reality warping. He's very deal makey.
And he leads right into the dimensions of darkness stuff with Doctor Strange.
Exactly. He leads very much into the next movie that we're supposed to get for Doctor Strange. I'm almost certain it's going to be him at this point.
Yeah. And one thing that I'm also really, really kind of excited about. It's not just, well, Omega Welton in the chat says Dormammu. It wouldn't be Dormammu because Dormammu was not known to be a deal maker / reality bender. He is more so a person that's all about, Dormammu is more of a force. Mm. Dormammu is all about, you know, conquest, violence, that kind of stuff.
Mephisto plays to me more like the alternate reality sort of person.
Yeah.
And we know with Spider-Man 3, casting Tobey Maguire and Andrew Garfield that we're probably going to get into the Spider-Verse as a live-action type movie.
Yep.
I think the entirety of like the first saga of MCU was the Infinity War. The second saga has got to be the multiverse, and it's going to be the multiverse and probably Secret Wars.
That's what I think.
Is the grand culmination.
That's what I think. I think we open up the multiverse
yep.
through WandaVision / the Multiverse of Madness.
Yep.
We get all these stories, and then ultimately we end at Secret Wars.
Yep. That's the conclusion.
Which was about essentially saving multiple realities.
Yes. Yep. I think that's where we're going.
I hope so. And Omega Welltall said Mojo. The thing about Mojo is I feel like that would have been the easy bait and switch, low-hanging fruit villain for a show based off TV.
Yeah.
I think that's where everybody originally thought. But I think it's really hard to introduce. I mean, I think you could introduce Mojo because there's a multiverse aspect. But I think that becomes very, very, very hard to do. and do it in a way that makes sense to the average viewer. Yeah. I think Mojo would be a great hat tip to people who are very deep into X-Men lore, but not necessarily the average viewer. But I do think it would be great if they introduce Mojo, because if you introduce Mojo, you got to introduce Shatterstar, and Shatterstar could be a great hero, because if I am not mistaken, we do not have a confirmed gay hero in the MCU. So you could do it with Shatterstar. So who knows?
I just had a thought as to who a villain of this could potentially be.
Who's that?
What if it's... All right, I might just be completely wrong, okay, because I don't remember the Fox movies very well, and I apologize for that. They're terrible, and I didn't
Legion?
Like them. Legion? No, what if it's Scarlet Witch from the Fox universe?
Ooh. Could be.
Yeah, what if Scarlet Witch in the Fox universe is effectively doing something along the lines of House of M and is the one who is kind of like tearing things open?
Could be.
That could be a play, too.
Either way, just a thought. Scarlet Witch. But with that said, that's going to be it for part two. We will talk more on WandaVision, obviously, next Wednesday for the next episode. Omega Well Tall said, yo, and this is the merging of the Fox and the MCU. Absolutely.
I for sure. Like,
well, first of all,
whether
regardless,
or not the villain is Scarlet Witch in the Fox universe, I believe that's exactly what's happening
that's
here.
This WandaVision is essentially the, even more so than Iron Man, in the first Captain America movie,
yeah,
was like, oh, okay, and this is everything kind of coming together. We're tying threads together of these different films.
And it's the beginning of the Infinity Stones.
And it's the beginning of the
This TV show is meant to be the opening salvo of the next saga, which is going to be the Marvel Multiverse.
Yep.
For sure, that's where this is. Like,
yep.
I'll put it this way. If that's not where this is going, what the hell are they
doing?
What
are they doing? Yeah.
Like, then they're out of their minds. Because, like, this is a perfect way to open the multiverse up and start doing it. And just finally, Disney has gone to great lengths and great dollars to bring and consolidate all these properties back together. If you think they don't want to get them all into one mainline continuity, you're out of your mind.
Exactly.
That's exactly where this is
going. Exactly. So that's going to be it for the episode today. Don't worry. We'll be back tomorrow, y'all, with more Checkpoint Daily. Bye-bye.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.